fuck have you done now?
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Brad Gilmore Show on Demand. Yeah, it's been a minute. It has been a minute. Admittedly, I haven't checked in a while. I think the last show I put up was Chris Lloyd, which is awesome. But I, excuse me, I had a little vibrato going on there. I've been working on other projects, as probably some of you know. Some of you have followed, I hope, some of my other work outside of this show and this show only. Been doing stuff with Book over there on the Hall of Fame podcast. So if you've been listening to that, thank you. Back to the Future, the podcast, season 7 was my favorite thing that I've done on that entire show. That entire 5-6 year run of Back to the Future, the podcast. That's been my favorite thing I have done. And I've, you know, been working on other stuff. New projects, been writing a lot. It's been an interesting time. I got engaged since the last time that we talked, so that's pretty cool. The float and I are official. We're going to say our I do's probably, you know, late this year, early next year. I don't know. We're figuring it out, looking for houses. So things have been going on is pretty much what I'm trying to tell you. Things have been happening. But I said I wanted to, you know, dust the, is dust the right thing to say? I mean, should I say dust it off? Dust the podcast off? Can you dust a podcast off? I don't think so. But that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to dust the podcast off and start doing some interviews again and talk to people that I find interesting about things that I find interesting. And there might be times where I just talk to myself, but I'm going to make the commitment of the weekly. It's a big commitment. It is. Because I have a lot of things that I do. But I want to make this a weekly commitment, even if it's just me talking about the things of the day, stories and anecdotes that have happened in this crazy world that we all inhabit and things that happen in our own little micro universes. So yeah, that's what we're going to do. I hope you enjoy. Today, we have an interesting one. Today is one that I'm excited about because not only am I a fan of this guy, I've seen him a lot. But he just wrote a book, which I find fascinating, and the book is about Jack Ruby. Now, Jack Ruby was the guy who killed JFK, supposedly, right? Jack Ruby was the one who said, "Hey, Oswald," and then shot Lee Harvey Oswald as he was coming out of the police station, live on television. This is a thing that I've always been fascinated by JFK. I don't know why. Because for me, I'm born in the early 90s. So the JFK assassination was 30 years before I was even born. And since then, it's been like, what, 60 years almost since JFK was assassinated. So you would think that somebody, especially like a young kid like I was, would, I don't even know why I found it fascinating, but I did. I always found the JFK thing interesting. I remember just, I always would ask my parents and my grandparents about it because it just was, wow, a president was killed in your lifetime? It's not like, you know, Lincoln or McKinley or Garfield or any of those significant figures in history. They all were presidents of the United States. But it's not like it was any of those guys, right? I mean, this was somebody who was in, you know, the current modern day era of the United States. This is in the 1960s. This is, you know, my parents were alive. My grandparents were working adults, raising families, and the president of the United States was assassinated. It's just, it was insane to me. And JFK was such a figure of his time, you know, young senator, handsome dude, really debonair and suave, very incredible orator. You know, we didn't see anybody like him again until Obama. Like, there was no young president. I mean, Gary Hart, who ran for president, sure, but there was like no young, handsome, eloquent, you know, just, I don't know, revolutionary-ish, right? Because JFK wanted to do a lot of things that may have even made him a target of potential assassination plots or whatever, but he was a revolutionary figure, and he was just getting into what he wanted to do when he got assassinated. And the thing about it is that makes it even crazier was it's not like he was assassinated overseas, or even he was, you know, in Des Moines, Iowa. It was in Dallas, Texas, something that's just 400 miles north of where I'm sitting currently. So it was a real place. So I was kind of fascinated by it. I had this weird morbid curiosity with the assassination. And then, you know, all those things about, for me, it wasn't even like for most people who had the Abraham Zapruder film, you know, a decade later in 73, I think was when that came out. But I was raised pretty much accepting the fact that it was most likely a conspiracy. And as a lover of history and someone who studies history, I didn't think that, I mean, I guess I just found it interesting that the fact that the story that we are told in the history books could be wrong. Like, how could history be wrong? Excuse me. And it's something you grapple with as a kid, because you go to school, you're taught these are the things that happened. They got us here. Here are the facts of the case. Here's the history of it. But we know that history, at least that what I was taught, I don't know at the elementary and secondary levels today if they're, you know, still taught that Columbus discovered America, but that's what we were taught, and it's kind of hard to discover a place where people are already living, right? So I knew that history was imperfect, I guess. And I came to that realization through this JFK conspiracy. Now, I'm not saying that Oswald didn't act alone, but I'm pretty sure that he didn't, right? I mean, if you were to cook up like the perfect fall guy, it would be the dude who went to Russia and renounced his U.S. citizenship only to come back and be like a pro-Cuban guy. And if you're looking into hatching a plot, you need someone crazy enough to try to do it. I don't think he came up with it by himself. I really don't. Could he have pulled the trigger on the fatal shot? Sure. Does the back into the left thing bother me? Sure. Sorry, I'm getting over, I think, a cold. Does it make sense? Can you explain why Kennedy went back into the left in the video? Yes, you can. I mean, he's being shot at. He's leaning forward. Shots are ringing out. What do you do when that? If you're a Secret Service officer, you're going to go faster to try to make the shot more difficult for the would-be assassin. And then when you accelerate in a vehicle, you know, your body's going to go backward. So take that for what you will. The magic bullet theory is ridiculous. I think everyone can accept that. So I was always fascinated by it, and it was in 2000 and I want to say 2015, I want to say, whenever WrestleMania 32 happened in Dallas, whatever year that was, I went up there with my podcasting co-host at the time, and we went up there and we both said, well, you know, we got to, he was into conspiracies as well, so I was like, we got to go see Dealey Plaza, right? And the first thing I remember is it's a lot smaller than I thought it would be. Like, it's a very, like, compact area. If you've never been to Dealey Plaza in Dallas, it's a very compact area. And I remember walking, and I remember standing where Abraham Zapruder, you know, was shooting to see Kennedy, and he got the assassination. And you even see, which I kind of find tacky, the city of Dallas has painted an X on the street where Kennedy was killed for whatever reason. I'm not sure, but it's there. Like, I mean, I understand why they did it, but it's just kind of tacky. It's like, here's the exact spot where a bullet entered the President of the United States' head and he died. Like, it's kind of a little much, in my opinion. Nevertheless, we're looking there. Then we're looking at the school book depository, looking at where Oswald shot from, and it didn't really make a lot of sense to me. Why would he shoot him going away from him when he could have gone to the other side of the school book depository on the same floor, had a better shot of him coming up Houston Street? Doesn't matter. Anyway, I'm off on a tangent. Oswald was the guy fingered for killing the president. And then Jack Ruby kills him on television. And you just wonder, why did he kill him? And then, after you start thinking of why, you know, he says, Oswald. And then Oswald says, I'm just a patsy. And I start thinking about Oliver Stone's film, JFK, which historical critics have gone off about. And I love the film. I think Kevin Costner does a great job. But I don't know. Your mind starts to wonder and you really think, okay, conspiracy. This makes sense. And there's even the show 11/22/63, which was a J.J. Abrams produced show, I believe. And, you know, Oswald and Ruby knew each other in that movie. They knew in that show, they knew each other in JFK. So you do start to think that there was a bigger conspiracy with Ruby, and Ruby was hired to silence him. But then that's where everyone's thinking of Ruby ends. Most people end at that moment. Okay, he shot Oswald. Maybe they had something to do with it. And then you forget about Jack Ruby. But Jack Ruby was put on trial for murder of Lee Harvey Oswald. Go figure. He killed somebody on national television. And up until Dan Abrams wrote this book, I didn't even think about a trial of Jack Ruby. My thinking of Jack Ruby ended at the fact of, oh, he and Oswald probably knew each other. Maybe Ruby was in on it too. That's as far as it went. So Dan Abrams writes this book about the trial of Jack Ruby. And the result, which I found shocking. I did not know the verdict came in this way. And Dan explains the verdict. I won't spoil it. You're going to be surprised by how and what happened in this trial. But Dan explains it. Dan also talks about his version of events in a way of like how he feels that all the stuff happened with Jack Ruby and the JFK assassination, Lee Harvey Oswald, what he thinks of the JFK movie, what he thinks of Jim Garrison, who was the New Orleans district attorney, who was the one who the movie JFK is really about, the one who, you know, Kevin Costner plays and goes after Clay Bertrand, all that stuff. We talk about it this week on the podcast. This is Dan Abrams talking about his brand new book. I hope you enjoy it. I enjoyed it. And I'm going to let Bun B tell you who's in this.
Brad Gilmore and his bitch.
And he joins me right now to talk about the new book, Kennedy's Avenger, Assassination Conspiracy and the Forgotten Trial of Jack Ruby. Mr. Dan Abrams joins us on the show. Dan, how are you doing, sir?
I'm great. Good to be with you.
I'm excited to talk to you because the Kennedy assassination, I'm not the only one, has been a point of fascination for me for the entirety of my life. But one of the guys, as you say, one of the forgotten members of that whole conspiracy, the whole story is Jack Ruby. Jack Ruby, of course, the man who killed Lee Harvey Oswald. So I guess why was Jack Ruby the person you wanted to really target for this project? And why was he such a point of fascination for you?
So my co-author and I, David Fisher, have written three other books about great forgotten trials involving presidents. And the first one was about a great murder case that Lincoln had argued 9 months before he got the Republican nomination. Theodore Roosevelt as the defendant in a case after he was president. John Adams representing the British soldiers. And, you know, we were sort of bouncing around some ideas and sort of talking about the Kennedy assassination. And you know, I'm the legal correspondent. I know I'm supposed to know all the legal stories, right? We're looking at each other and we're like, whatever happened with the Jack Ruby trial? And David and I are looking at each other. We're like, he was convicted, right? Of course. And so we're like, you know what? Let's dig in on this one a little bit. We both came back and we were like, oh my God, this story is so rich. This trial was so amazing. There were so many fascinating characters in this case, from the lawyer to you know, celebrity witnesses, to a jailbreak, to the conspiracy theories that emerged from the trial. This is our next book. And the more we got into it, the more it was like, you know, even after the trial, you know, the investigations, Ruby taking a lie detector test, Ruby talking to the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court. So the story was really, really rich. And we were surprised because so few people really know that much about the trial of Jack Ruby.
Yeah, I would venture, I guess, to say most people know little to nothing about the trial of Jack Ruby. His story really begins and ends in the American public consciousness on the 24th of November. That's the first that people hear right. about him, and it's really the last that people think of him. He's the guy who killed the guy who killed Kennedy. Yeah. That's seriously what his story is in history. So it's interesting that I heard you just characterize it as this fascinating trial full of all kinds of things going on. It was almost a celebrity trial of its time. And it made me kind of go back to the only point of reference that I have for a trial of this magnitude would be the trial of the century with O.J. Simpson, right? I mean, this celebrity trial, crazy things happening, evidence, all these theories. And in that trial, the country was kind of split a lot. You know, half of them thought that O.J. was innocent and he was still their hero. The other one thought that he was sure guilty and he was the villain of the story. How was Jack Ruby looked at by the American public? Was he looked at as a hero or was he looked at more like a villain?
Well, you know, it's a good question because that was the issue the defense had to grapple with. And I will tell you that in the early days, right, just after his arrest, I don't want to say that he was viewed as a hero, but there was a lot of sympathy and understanding for Jack Ruby. And that's the reason that it's surprising that he did not pursue a defense, which would have been what is called murder without malice. I mean, effectively, we call manslaughter these days.
Right.
But in the state of Texas at that time, the punishment for that crime was no more than 5 years in prison. Jack Ruby could have just said, yeah, I did it. I lost it. Because, you know, if you follow what Jack Ruby was doing that weekend, he was increasingly spiraling. You know, he's going in the middle of the night, going to take pictures of a billboard that he's convinced was the person who put it up. Was somehow connected to the killing of Kennedy and this and that. And so, you know, there's definitely a very good argument that Ruby could have gotten this murder without malice. But instead, his lawyer named Melvin Belli was probably maybe the best known lawyer in the country at the time, decides he wants an all-out acquittal. I'm going to be the lawyer who gets the guy who shot Oswald live on TV acquitted. And so he pursues this defense, which is effectively an insanity defense, that Ruby doesn't remember it happening, that he suffered an epileptic seizure, an epileptic event. He argued that he had a very rare form of epilepsy. And, you know, I think that lost a lot of the sympathy that was there for Ruby. Meaning, I think it became clear that there was a level of mental illness with Ruby, but to be acquitted on an insanity defense, it has to be more than just, you know, some level of mental illness. It has to be literally an inability to understand right from wrong. And in this case, the notion that somehow he didn't remember it happening.
Yeah, I wouldn't think that would probably be the best path to take forward for a defense. But correct me if I'm wrong, Dan. So Jack Ruby dies an innocent man. His trial was overturned. What was the reason it was overturned? From what I understand, it had something to do with he had an oral confession to the murder in the police car, and that was deemed inadmissible. Is that right, or was there something else that got him off?
Yeah, so it was comments that he made to the police that they said he made, effectively suggesting that he had been thinking about this since the Friday before, you know, since the moment Kennedy was shot, which would show premeditation, right? But even though this was before the famous Miranda decision came out, there were still rules in the state of Texas basically saying that you can't start questioning someone who's in custody without a lawyer if it's beyond the incident itself occurring. Meaning like, you know, if in the moments after he shoots him, as many witnesses testified, he yelled USOB or et cetera, that's all admissible. But it's the comments made after that fact, and the court ruled that there was a statement in particular that should not have been admitted. And they said that there should have been a change of venue out of Dallas for this trial. And so Jack Ruby got a new trial. And I think he was ready to pursue this other defense, which probably would have gotten him out with time served. That's the amazing thing. He'd already served 3.5 years in prison. If he had pursued this manslaughter defense, he would have, I think, gotten off by the end of the second trial. Because even if he was convicted, he probably would have gotten time served.
I mean, it's incredible. It's incredible that that wasn't the road that they pursued initially. As you said, it sounds like the lawyer kind of wanted to, he let his ego do some deciding for him.
Yeah.
Especially because how often, especially in the 1960s, did you get the crime on camera? It's not like today where everyone has a cell phone, but that actual crime was committed on camera and millions of people witnessed it. So I think that pursuing any other defense was kind of silly.
And the defense actually made an argument that no juror who saw the event should be able to be a juror because they were a witness to the crime. And so no witness to the crime should be allowed on the jury. And that was not an argument that ultimately was successful.
Now, you being a lover of all historical trials regarding the presidents, whether it be, you know, this Jack Ruby trial or other ones that you mentioned earlier, what was your assessment on the Jim Garrison trial in New Orleans against Clay Shaw? You know, that he was the only one to really bring a public trial against anyone for the assassination of President Kennedy. And he was kind of looked at as a kook. And even when you look at the characterization of him in Oliver Stone's film, sure, he comes off as a guy trying to fight for the right thing. But was he grasping at straws or do you think there was any there?
No, I think he was a kook. And I think that Oliver Stone's movie was, you know, very misleading about what happened. I mean, the fact that he used Garrison, who was really, you know, I mean, you look at the coverage at the time from any sort of reputable entities, and, you know, he was viewed as really someone who was abusing his power back then. And, you know, the notion that somehow, you know, there was this grand conspiracy of all these people and to kill Kennedy. And look, and this gets into the bigger picture, because I think we should separate out, if we're going to talk about it, Oswald versus Ruby, right? I am convinced that Ruby could not have been part of a conspiracy. This idea that Ruby was hired as the guy to silence Oswald, right? The reason, just the easiest way to eliminate that is to say, Ruby was there on the night that Oswald was arrested. Oswald came out. If Ruby was there to silence Oswald, you kill him on the night he's arrested. Instead, he doesn't kill him that night. He goes and he starts spiraling. And then on the Sunday, 2 days later, after Oswald has now had 2 days of questioning by the police, remember, the goal was to silence him. Ruby's the guy at the press conference that night on Friday night where the DA is talking about Oswald. And Ruby's raising his hand, correcting the language that the DA is using to describe what organization that Oswald was associated with. The hitman's going to start drawing attention to himself, correcting the DA's language about where what organization Oswald was with. And then on Sunday, the day that he was killed, the announcement had been that Oswald would be moved at 10 a.m. The media was all there. Everyone was ready for the big 10 a.m. moving from the police station to the jail. Ruby's basically waking up around this time. And he, an hour later, drives to, maybe let's say it's about 10:30, 10:45. He's driving to the Western Union to give $25 to a woman who works with him, who he has promised he would send money to. And he is there by happenstance, meaning the police station happens to be right down the block from the Western Union. And he gets a receipt, 11:17 a.m. So we're now an hour and 17 minutes after Ruby was supposed to be moved. And he saunters into the police station. And a minute later, Oswald is brought out. So if you just look at what happened Sunday, you have to believe, if you believe Ruby was part of a conspiracy, the police are in on it, right? It has to be. Has to be that the police are in on it.
Right.
And so it just doesn't, you know, it doesn't make sense. And look, there are other reasons as well, but that's separate from the question of Oswald. And I say it's separate because, you know, you can understand why Oswald, people suspected, was part of it. The guy lived in Russia.
Right. Revoked his U.S. citizenship.
Yeah, I mean, he moved out of the United States to go live in Russia. He was being questioned by the FBI. The CIA did have him on their radar, not for killing the president. But with all that said, I still don't believe the evidence is there that Oswald is part of a conspiracy. Because if he was part of a conspiracy, by the way, they did a really bad job of funding it, right? He has to get a ride to work that day. And the guy who gives him a ride talks about the long brown paper bag he's put over this thing that he said was curtain rods, right? It's the weapon. You're thinking, man, if this guy's being funded by the CIA or the Russians or the Cubans or whoever it is, maybe they get him a ride to work that day so he doesn't have to bring the gun wrapped in brown paper bag to the office. And then the escape that Oswald has to make, he takes a public bus and then a taxi, and then he gets caught at a movie theater. I mean, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, when you lay it out that way, it would be hard to say that Jack Ruby was hired to silence him, especially with that 48-hour gap. Did they know each other at all? Because I've seen that characterization a lot, yeah. that they knew one another. Did they have any relationship at all?
There is no credible evidence that they knew each other at all. There were, there was a great anecdote from an illusionist who used to do a show at Ruby's club. And right after Ruby shoots Oswald, this guy makes a statement to a media entity, basically saying he remembers Oswald from the club because he used to do a memory act, he said, and he remembered Oswald being there as one of the people he had to remember. And so then when the FBI catch up with him, he's like, well, you know, I don't really know if he was the guy. So suddenly the guy with the memory act doesn't remember. So that's the kind of, you know, evidence that there would be headlines, et cetera, that would suggest, oh, witnesses say they remember Ruby and Oswald. There is no credible evidence, in my view, that Ruby and Oswald knew each other at all.
So my last question for you, Dan, regarding this is I've heard you and other people characterize as Jack Ruby as someone who wasn't rather successful. He had some mafia ties, but, you know, really how much pull did he have? Probably little to none. Kind of a failed entrepreneur time and time again. But you name the book Kennedy's Avenger. And in today's world, with the popularity of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, that word Avenger carries a positive tone to it. You look at Avengers as heroes. Do you think Jack Ruby will be remembered as a Avenger in the characterization of Marvel as a hero, or will he just be remembered as this guy who shot Oswald?
I think it's just going to be the guy who shot Oswald. You know, I don't think that Jack Ruby is a hero, and I don't think that he is going to go down as a hero. I mean, because even if you were so angry at Oswald, right? I mean, furious, as so many were, you still would rather, in retrospect, the guy have, you know, been put on trial. And that would have helped eliminate a lot of these conspiracy theories, by the way, because, you know, part of the reason so many of these conspiracy theories came up is because in the trial, there were so many unanswered questions. There were questions that were left sort of hanging in the air, like the one you asked. An FBI agent was asked at one point, did Oswald and Ruby know each other? Objection. Wasn't answered. Defense says to the prosecution, will you stipulate that Oswald acted alone? We're not stipulating to nothing.
Oh,
what does that mean? So, right. So the point is that a lot of that happened from the Ruby trial.
Wow. Yeah. Well, it's a fascinating book. I started reading it this morning. It is available everywhere right now. Kennedy's Avenger, Assassination Conspiracy and the Forgotten Trial of Jack Ruby. You can get it in audiobook form as well if you're one of the listeners like I am. Dan, thank you so much for taking the time. I could talk about the Kennedy assassination all day, but I really appreciate you making some time for us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right. You have a good one. That is Dan Abrams, everybody. We'll be right back.